Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Right now, we need to speak to Mohammed Elarian of PIMCO. Dr. Elarian, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Let's start first with your Egypt. You are Egyptian and have a wonderful heritage there. I believe your father was in the diplomatic corps for Egypt. Give us your thoughts and update of government stability in Cairo and Egypt.
So the context is a very bumpy journey towards greater democracy and greater respect for human rights. It's a journey that's being conducted with very few credible institutions and no Mandela-like leader who can tell the people, forgive the past, but don't forget it. So it's inherently a very messy journey, a very large journey, and what you see today is the empowerment of the people to control their destiny.
Meghnad Desai at the London School of Economics has written a lot on the phrase Islamist. Is the real risk here, and this goes back, I think, of Albert Hourani and going back a million years back in the 20th century, is there a risk here that we lose Egypt to an Islamist zeitgeist or regime?
I think that risk is low. This is a secular society. It is a religious society, but it's a secular society. You see the reaction in the street in the last few days when there was an attempted grab for power. So I think the system has enough checks and balances now that the people have been empowered.
The situation has been portrayed as a power grab, but Morsi's really in a situation where somebody's got to be in charge of the country. There's no parliament at the moment. He and the judiciary have been feuding, and when he was put into office, many of his powers were stripped. So can you completely blame him for taking on additional powers or at least trying to do something?
So I think most people understand what he's trying to do, which is to progress in the context of absence of other issues. As you said, there's no parliament. The judicial is still being reoriented. The institutions are still being oriented. However, the extent to which it was done and the way in which it has been done has raised so many concerns. I look at the silver lining of all this, which is that the average Egyptian now feels that they can control their destiny. Which, if you then ask the question, what's going to happen on the economy, what's going to happen to the long-term future of the country, it's very important that the citizen feels that they own their country. And that's the big change between now and what Egypt was before the revolution.
Well, and I was speaking yesterday with Angus Blair, the smartest guy I know in Cairo from the Signet Institute, and he said that there's a big difference now between the original Arab Spring protests in Tahrir Square and what we're seeing. Then the country shut down. Now, commerce is still going on, business is still going on, but because people feel they can go out and publicly demonstrate, there's sort of this effort back and forth to bring people out and show we have power and that sort of thing. And it's less a mass protest that shuts down the country than a demonstration of democracy.
Correct. It's an expression of people's feelings. And that's a whole journey towards greater democracy and greater respect for human rights. I would also tell you, if you ask Angus and others, what's the big change? He'll tell you civic involvement. The average Egyptian today, because they feel that they own their country, is much more involved in community service and in a range of other things. And I think that's positive for the future.
Dr. Elarian, there's another battle going on. It's in Washington Square. Or I guess I could call it that. Your thoughts on the events we have seen. I go back to your wonderful book and the idea of unknown unknowns. For Mohammed Elarian, what is the unknown unknown in Washington?
So whether it's Washington, whether it's Europe with Greece, many Western economies are having to adjust to deleveraging. And are having to adjust to deleveraging in the context of low growth, which is our reality here in the United States, or negative growth, which is the reality of many European economies. That means revisiting all sorts of promises on the tax side, on the expenditure side. It means changing expectations, and it is a messy process. In terms of what we expect, Tom, to come out over the next 31 days, because we've only got 31 days left, by the way, if we had to avoid a fiscal cliff, we think it's going to be a mini bargain as opposed to a grand bargain. It's going to include higher tax rates and expenditure cuts. It's also going to encompass something that hasn't been talked about, some treatment of the debt ceiling so that we don't trip over that in January. And at best, it will be a down payment for something else next year. But more likely is people are going to come out of this so bruised that we all are going to be discussing fiscal reform for many, many, many months and perhaps years.
Is it going to take you getting involved? And by you, I mean the markets. Are we going to have some sort of meltdown to knock some heads together?
I think, you know, if you look back at what happened with TOP, et cetera, that helps. The market on the whole is trying to distinguish, Mike, which is important, between political noise, okay, and political signal. And so far, it has done a pretty good job of making that distinction.
Is that why we're hanging in there, even though both sides are saying we're getting nowhere?
Correct. But so you see intraday volatility, okay? But if you look over a longer time period, right, there is sort of a pricing in of, I would say, 60 to 70% probability that we could get this mini bargain.
But to the credit of PIMCO and to you and Mr. Gross, it has decidedly been a new normal, you know, 2.7% GDP, which everybody's marking down on an inventory build. And whether it's Europe and their real economy or it's us and our real economy, the combination of market reaction to a slowing American economy could be tangible. To me, that's got to be the catalyst to get these people to compromise. I don't see any other way.
You would hope so. And you know, there's a lot of uncertainty about today's numbers, the U.S. numbers in terms of Hurricane Sandy. But step away from that. We also got numbers out of Canada, out of India, out of Brazil. And they all have a common theme. The global economy is slowing. Export growth is no longer what it is. So any country looking to grow has to ask the question, is it going to be the household sector or is it going to be the business sector? And until you give confidence that you are dealing with the structural headwinds, businesses are going to be extremely hesitant, and that's what we see in this country. And households, there's a limit to how much they can spend beyond their income. So the employment issue becomes very important. So the new normal, which has been, we believe, in operation since 2009, as the global economy has tried to reset, is a reality that unless you remove the structural headwinds, we are going to be facing sluggish growth, unusually high unemployment, and recurrent debt and deficit concerns.
When do the structural headwinds go away? No, let me rephrase that. When they go away, do we then see a sudden rebound? Are you in the camp that says we could have a much better 2013 if they get through this budget deal because then companies would start spending and that would spur consumers?
That's the Bernanke camp, we call that.
Well, I would put an asterisk next to it, okay? If we see a major effort to remove structural headwinds, and that's a really important qualifier, Mike, really important qualifier. If we see that, then there's a basis to be optimistic. There's a lot of cash sitting on the sideline that could be put to use in the real economy. Second, importantly, there's a lot of technological advances that we believe can lead to significant productivity increases. However, you need to get these headwinds out of the way. And so far, we've seen very little either here or in Europe that gives you confidence that that's going to happen.
Well, the title is Egypt, Loud, Messy, and in Charge of Its Destiny. Maybe that should be Washington, Loud, Messy, and maybe in charge of its destiny. As we do, Mohamed El-Erian with some thoughtful conversation. Mohamed, one of the backstories here is we're all cliffy, as yields have really come in Europe. Has PIMCO called all clear on Europe?
We certainly respect the role of the ECB, and that's why we thought that the ECB had bought the system some time and as a result had made certain bonds, short end in Italy and Spain particularly, attractive. That was a few months ago, and the market has certainly responded in the way we're hoping it would respond. Going forward, right, remember that like other central banks, the best the ECB can do is simply provide a bridge. It cannot deliver a destination. So it's really important to keep an eye on the underlying issues, and the underlying issues we all know is, can these economies grow? Secondly, can they get their debt under control? And thirdly, can the political system support multi-year reforms? We've already seen a lot of fudging going on in Greece. I think this latest agreement is nothing more than yet another attempt to buy a few weeks and months.
Thank you.
Okay, but it is a big fudge, and we have to see it as such. It's unfortunate because I think the Greek people continue to suffer. So people have to keep an eye on it. And remember, one of the key issues, and that's been stressed by Bill Gross, by our investment committee, is central bank policy is getting increasingly ineffective. It's not yet totally ineffective, but it's getting increasingly ineffective. And investors have to respect that and have to position accordingly for that.
Could we see this Greek deal fall apart maybe as early as next week? The IMF says they're not going to give Greece any money until they do another debt buyback. But every investor I've talked to say they're not going to participate. There's no point in it for private sector investors now.
Yeah, I think that what's likely to happen is that the official creditors, the Troika, so think of the ECB, the European Union, and the IMF, they will not pull the plug on Greece. They will continue to kick the can down the road and find all sorts of obfuscating language to try to convince people that debt sustainability is in sight. If Greece falls apart in the next few weeks, it's going to be because the Greek citizens no longer wish to engage in a process that does not provide a light at the end of the tunnel. So the key thing to look at, Mike, is how do the Greeks themselves react? Do they continue, or at some point do you get such rejection on the street, economic, political, social, and financial, that Greece itself has to change course?
You said that just a second ago that central bank policy is becoming less and less effective. So what does Ben Bernanke do on December 13th with Operation Twist running out? Is there any point to them going ahead with additional bond purchases?
So what we expect he will do is he will convert Operation Twist into outright purchases of bonds. And you will have to decide whether you call this QE 4.0 or QE 3.1.
You'll have to find a name. You'll have to give us a name, you know.
Well, we'll have to find a name. But expect him, in addition to what he's doing on the mortgage side, expect him to convert Operation Twist into an outright purchases of government bonds. Second issue, which is going to be important, is look for whether they take a big step on the guidance language. Do they go to quantitative thresholds or not? And that is a big step. But I think the Fed finds itself in a no-win position. If it exits, it will likely trigger quite a reaction in markets and the real economy. But if it continues to remain involved, it will not be able to deliver on economic outcomes. Mm. So the Fed is in a very difficult position. And it's not there by choice. It's there by necessity, because other institutions of government, the structural reform element that we've discussed, other institutions are not stepping up to the plate.
Well, Mohammed Alarian with us with PIMCO. It's Friday. All I know is I got a lot of football last week. Here was the high point for me.
You got a busted play here. And then Sanchez gets hit. The ball is loose and it's alive. And then going into the end zone is Steve Gregory, who's had an interception, two fumble recoveries, and a touchdown.
I've never seen this before in my life. Watch this. Vince Wilfork is going to throw.
Yeah, the great team over at NBC Sports, courtesy of a great team and a great weekend of football. We now join with surveillance New York Jets expert Dr. Alarian. Here's how bad it is, Mohammed. You and I are going to the game this weekend, the Cardinals. We're sitting in section 306, row 25. Usually these are $50 seats, but I can finally afford them. They're $25.77.
Well, good luck at the game. Okay, I don't go because, you know, I get very depressed. I can tell you that you have just sent me into utter depression. You didn't need to replay that. I can tell you every bit of that second quarter a week ago. I suffered tremendously. I've never seen such a big Jets debacle. However, we are Jets fans, so we remain fans.
Was this the worst Jets moments ever?
It was, because it was against the Patriots.
Oh.
Okay. I mean, it was awful, Mike. It was absolutely
okay,
awful.
But let's take your professional expertise, your game theory and strategic organization. If you were advising the Jets and you had to look at the unknown of the Jets next year, what would you do?
Tom, I know what I can speak to, and I cannot speak. I mean, look, Tom, The Jets used to be a very simple equation. Will the offense turn up or not every week? Now, you have to ask yourself, will the defense turn up? What about the special teams, right? And then all these random acts that occur. So I don't. This is really an unknown unknown, and I'll leave it to people like you to deal with it.
One last question. Should Mr. Ryan come back?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Okay, Dr. Alarian, thank you so much. Muhammad Alarian, his description there of the offense and the defense, you could have taken that right down to Washington.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.